Hello, everyone. It is June 29th of 2016, the last weekly manga recap of the month. I'm Y-Rot.
Of all time, maybe?
Huh?
Of all time, maybe?
What, the last podcast we're going to do of all time?
Yeah. Like, what if, like, a ghost attacks us?
Okay. Well, bye, everyone.
Well, no. We have to do this one. The ghost comes afterwards. It's the ghost of July.
All right. Well, our sign-off is going to be very different then.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be like, guys, we'll catch you next time for weekly. Ah! You see, like, a raptor flying from this side of the screen. It's like, oh, I always knew it was going to end this way.
We would not be discussing Murcielago.
Yeah. Instead, I'm going to be getting a fate worse than fucking Newman's character in Jurassic Park, because these ones are bigger.
Not even Wayne Knight, Newman.
Yeah, I don't refer to him by his actual name, just his character in a different piece of media. Bam.
So,
I liked us sinking ourselves drinking so that neither one of us could talk or fill that dead air.
Exactly.
That was A-plus chemistry that we built up over the plus 5 years of this podcast.
That's fine, though. Skype wasn't going to let us talk anyway.
No, I hate Skype in every fashion. I've had this weird issue with my Skype recently where it used to only be for group calls, but I would get called into a group call, I'd jump into it, I couldn't hear anybody. They could hear me, I couldn't hear them. Wouldn't matter what I did. So what we had to do is, like, the workaround is I had to have everyone end the call, then I had to call one person, and then add everyone else in individually, and that would occasionally work. Now, you just tried calling me before the show, and I couldn't hear you. So the same
problem... You tried calling me.
Yeah, sorry, I tried calling you, and it wouldn't work. So the problem is evolving in a weird way. But it's not even that. I already hate Skype with every fiber of my being. I now have to deal with it at work, because I have Skype for business at work, and it sucks there too! I just went into my Skype for business today. Like, one of our analysts was like, we have to have a meeting, we have to test Skype first, everybody get on it, it's very important, make sure you're there. I'm trying to jump into this, I'm like, I can't hear anybody, and for whatever stupid reason, Skype for business is like, you don't have an audio device. I was like, well, I do, because I'm listening to other things right now. Why aren't you detected it? And they're like, it's probably your audio device. You probably don't have one. You're a fool. And I'm like, how is this god-awful program?
As you're blasting Phil Collins, you're like, no, I'm pretty sure it's you guys.
Yeah, I'm like, I've heard fucking Susu Studio 12 times today, so that's not the issue. Like, how is this god-awful program as ubiquitous as it is? Like, I feel like I'm going to miss the bus. I'm like, wait. And I'm going to see, like, the Skype logo hang its head out the window, like, bye! Like, it's just, like, I'm going to be at the movie theater watching the next Captain America movie, and fucking a little Skype logo is going to, like, drive by in a scooter and just start spoiling the movie for me. He's going to be like, Benzer!
He dies in this one!
Yeah, Captain America doesn't make it! I'm like, oh, Skype, why? I can't stand it, Nick. It's infuriating me.
Yeah.
If I become a superhero... My nemesis has to be Skype.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and not like in a weird brainiac technology is unstoppable and truly it's stronger than we could ever be. Just the program. Like, I'm going to be like, hold on, let me answer this call from the mayor. Shit, I can't get it.
Oh, I can't.
All right, you hang up. Nope. I know it's an emergency. You hang up, then call me.
I can't hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah. I'm like, is your video not working? Hold on. Wait, mine says it's not recognizing an audio device. Or video... It says it doesn't recognize my computer. How is this? What does that even mean?
It says it's not running, even though it's clearly open right now.
It says I need to get a new version of Skype, but I downloaded it this morning. They didn't possibly have to patch something this god-awfully broken so quickly, did they? With the exact express knowledge that no matter what I do, it won't be fixed when I download the new version.
Oh, they're evil.
Magneto's robbed so many banks, and I've been just trying to get to him. Why do I rely on Skype so much for communication?
I'm glad that I forgot whatever tangent I was going to have us do originally, because it's a far better one.
I can't stand it. Alright. We need to get to jump, though.
Let's talk manga.
Yes.
Recap portion of Week of Manga Recap. We're going to start, as always, with Black Clover. Page 67, Bonds. So
it's not about stocks and bonds, though. I was really hoping for some financial advice, and that's not what this chapter's about.
I almost did a Yu-Gi-Oh! 5Ds reference, but, like, 90% of the audience probably won't get it.
They're like, weren't you guys going to recap that manga when it came out? Like, yeah, we did the first two chapters, and it kind of got boring.
Kizuna. Anyway, so we cut away from the fight against Veto last time in order to do a side battle, but we're back. Madden and Luck defeated, Asta defeated, and Kohono and Noelle have arrived in the scene to help out. Veto's looking confident, of course. Asta is like, I'm still not done! Jumps at him. Veto just backhands him, knocks him away. That puts him down. Asta finally seemingly just knocked out, it looks like, because he's very quiet for the rest of the chapter, let's just say. Although Kohono manages to break his fall by summoning a rhythm cushion with their song magic. Very specific spell.
I did have to stop. I was like, what is rhythm cushion? How's that attached to song magic?
That sounds incredibly sexual, too, doesn't it?
Rhythm cushion?
Yeah.
How so?
Yeah, you get on a cushion and you get into a rhythm on it. You get the beat going.
I mean, I feel like I have a dirty mind, and even I'm still not really getting onto this one. Is it, like, full of vibrators? Like, a cushion full of vibrators? And you're like, I can't sit on this. It's full of vibrators.
No, Nick's just a pervert, I guess.
Okay. It works.
So, then it's Kohono's turn to do stuff. And she actually shouts at Kiyoto and manages to awaken him just by being an annoying sister, I guess.
Do you think you and your sister would be good teaming up for magic attacks and things like that?
Well, I guarantee you that we wouldn't do as badly as they do. Oh, God.
Their magic is, like, meant for each other, though, right?
You would think so, yeah, because she, of course, has song magic, and he has dance magic. And so Kohono and Kiyoto reiterate their dreams of being an idol singer and a dancer. I like how Kohono is like, I'll be an idol singer. You'll be a dancer. Well, idol singer...
Just a dancer, I guess.
Just a dancer. An idol singer, you know, is a specific kind of thing that... Never mind. But yes, they start combining their magic together. She sings, he dances. And they use that to attack Veto with a combination spell, Sea God Slash. Basically, Kiyoto's dance magic is stronger because he dances to Kohono's song. And they go on this whole thing, is like, you know, our dreams! Basically.
Well, they do, to give it fairness, it is a moment that I thought worked kind of effectively, because they explain how this magic is so powerful, not because it's, like, the strongest magic, but because it's the magic they've been practicing all their lives as part of their duties within the temple.
We would offer up this song and dance to the sea god and to all of our people. This spell is our bond with the people of the underwater temple, and you'll never break it!
Yeah.
And then he breaks it.
And Veto's like, fuck you!
And it's really brutal. He just says, so what? And he slashes his hand, and he cuts off Kiyoto's right leg. And then he goes after Kohono and says, whatever, you people shouldn't even be talking about such things. And he pierces Kohono's throat. So, Kiyoto's dance and Kohono's song not only have been defeated, but he's basically ended their magic forever. Until they get healed. Yeah. Because I assume this is what's going to happen, because we've seen effective healing magic before. But it's incredibly brutal. He's picking up Kohono by her hair, and he's just saying, you know, your cheap dreams just went down the drain. You'll never be able to perform your silly songs or dances again. You know, have you tasted despair? And even when their grandfather tries to intervene because some of his traps go off, and even then, he just bats them away like they're nothing. And even so, Kohono is looking at him defiantly while she's basically spitting up blood. And
it's actually a really well done panel, too.
Mm-hmm. It's a really great face, well-drawn facial expression. She's breaking out in sweat, blood just oozing out of her mouth, but she just stares at him defiantly. And so he says, okay, well then, I'm just going to rip off your limbs one by one. But Noelle, of course, shouts at him to stop and tells him to let her go. She's worried that if she does anything, though, that she won't be able to control her magic. It will hit Kahona, though. So she doesn't know what she's going to do. And Veda's like, you just watch there. I'm going to, you know, finish your friend off. And Noelle then hears a voice in her head because Kahono is somehow using her magic to communicate with her. Even though her throat's been crushed, she's somehow using her magic to communicate with her. And she says, you know, you can do it. I don't have any doubt because I'm your friend that you can still do this. You can win if you fight him. And suddenly Noelle's grimoire starts fluttering and a huge aura of power surges around her. And Noelle says, I'm going to tell you one more time, let my friend go. While power starts surging into her wand. And that's the end of the chapter. I really like this chapter.
Yeah.
We haven't seen a whole lot from Kahono Kyato, but this was, I thought, a very effective short little moment that they have together. And just the sheer brutality of what Veto does to them. This guy's been built up incredibly well over the last few chapters, but this was, I think, the icing on the cake, really. Having him just beat Magna and Luck and Asta is one thing, but having him utterly destroy these two pretty likable characters and literally end their hopes and dreams for the future in incredibly brutal fashion. And now seemingly building up, okay, now Noelle is going to be the one to stop him. Very good.
I thought it was an extremely well done chapter. You know, I like, you know, and usually it's the issue I have where it's like Asta gets up again, but I like that he did get up again, and it wasn't like a moment where Veto's like, oh, I never expect this. He's just like, fuck off. Like, he's just annoyed. And it's just that presence they built up where Veto is terrifying. And even in this moment where Kyato and Kano work together, these two characters are kind of built to be like our new proud characters of this arc, the characters who have, you know, they've been given significance, they've been given focus. It would be fitting if those two characters and their team of attack was the thing that managed to overpower it. And it's this really kind of cool looking spell, has a neat effect. You know, I like how they tie it together to their entire lives. And Veto takes it and he's just like, whatever. And just cuts the one dude's leg off, just punches her right in the throat, and just, like, I guess, you know, destroys her fucking throat. Even, like, the monsters come out, and he still just kind of bats them away. He's building this idea of this guy who's just absurdly strong. Like, creating, finally, that impression that I think we lost during that whole leash thing, where, you know, like, the magic captains came in, and it was tough to really tell what levels these guys were at. It's, you know, seeing this right here, you're like, oh, I see now why this guy and the rest of them are supposedly so intimidating. I think narratively this entire chapter was done really well, and artistically, this is some of, I think, Tabata's best work. Even that chapter with, underneath that chapter, or panel with Kahono, there's a panel where Vito's holding her up by her ponytail, and it's entirely done in silhouette except for his one hand, which you can see, like, kind of cracking and tensing. And there's something just very, like, artistically kind of cool about that. It's a way to kind of, you know, add an interesting style to that shot and build that terror of what this man's fist can do. And I like the way it's ended with Noelle. I think, you know, it seems like this is something that's been built up for a while, actually, and you are getting kind of real proper prey off. Yami says, like, so you finally showed up. So, at least this is a series where the side character is the one who is apparently overflowing with potential, you know, and has this ridiculously huge chakra pool to draw from. So I like that. I also like, again, the last panel with Noelle. I like how you can still see the tears in her eyes, but you can still see the intensity in her too. It's really well done. Mm-hmm. She should wear pants though, but otherwise really well done. Let's talk about other chapters that are really well done, Nick.
It's okay, though. Rebecca will save them all, the young Chris.
Well, maybe. I don't think she can swim underwater. And if she could, that would mean she's an important character. She's not one of those, so I don't think
that's like that's your go-to. It's like, I don't know if she can help them. That would require her to swim.
Yeah, she'd have to go into the water. Probably something she can't do.
She'd probably, like, shrivel up, wouldn't she?
Yeah. You know.
Let's
your
do
fucking
bleach.
Old, wrinkly-ass skin. What?
Let's do Bleach. 679. The end. Yay!
It's over.
The Bleach.
Got to the final
chapter, Chris. Okay.
What do you think Kubo will call the last chapter of Bleach, Nick? What was the first one called? Strawberry? Death Strawberry?
Death Strawberry, yeah.
So maybe... But they already did that when they did the reboot of, like, Death of a Strawberry 2 or whatever.
Life in the Blueberry.
I imagine it's going to be... maybe Pop-Tart. Maybe that will be the final chapter. It's just, like, Nick's Pop-Tarts.
Nom, nom, nom. Okay.
And why me?
Last time, Yubak explained that his power was not to simply see the future or all possible futures, but to alter the future. Okay. This chapter reveals that Hoshvat's power is also bullshit.
I don't understand what any of these powers are. Every power explained in this chapter makes no sense to me. And I know I should be used to that. There are a couple powers in JoJo where I'm like, this is horseshit. Alright, your fucking fingernails can create wormholes in time? Sure, whatever. But I'm still like, I don't understand what any of these do. They all just seem to like, fuck you. It seemed like it hurt me, but no, fuck you. Now you're hurt.
So, yes. Yubak reiterates his explanation of his powers, and he says, well, you know, the two of you can only intervene with the moment you see before your eyes, but I can intervene with all the futures reflected on these eyes. You have overcome despair and changed the future countless times. Do you know why you were able to do that? It's because I wasn't there. It's a cool little speech, honestly. Yubak, despite his powers being kind of bullshit, Yubak's, like, wording, his acting, I guess you could say, has been pretty top-notch in this encounter he's had with Ichigo. He has seemed intimidating and confident and cool. So, now he gets to the point that he had been saying about before. It was like, oh, don't despair, Ichigo. And he continues to say that, I shall cut apart the future that you have changed. Do not despair, Ichigo. And Ichigo lets out this scream before we cut away to where Ishida is still getting his ass kicked by Hoshvat. He has been every single time we've cut to him. And this time, Hoshvat announces his Shrift's ability. We already knew it was Be the Balance, but basically what he says is,
fuck this power.
I have Shishigawara's power, but bullshit. Remember Shishigawara, the guy with the jackpot knuckle?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. Well, his whole thing was like, by punching stuff, I can just make stuff luckily happen. You know, if I punch a chandelier, then it will just so happen that the screws will fall loose and it'll fall. But if he overused the power, then it would eventually, you know, luck would stop being in his favor anymore. But Hoshvat's power is basically sort of the inverse. He, as bad shit happens to him, he eventually builds a power and then unleashes it. And he also has this bullshit shield.
Yeah, I was like, but why the shield? Like,
well, it's all happening to me, but it's all just going in this shield. And then I can build up all that bad stuff that's happened to the shield and then throw it back at you.
But it doesn't make any sense. Like, it logically, like, what does the shield have to do? It doesn't even play into the balance thing, unless you're, like, a shield in one arm, a sword in the other. But that's not really how. Like, I feel...
if you have a shield and sword, then your attack points get exchanged with your defense points, and this allows the giant soldier of stone to defeat your King Bottomhead.
But that's not balance. That's inverting. That's the opposite of balance. You've changed the numbers, and they're just as equally uneven as they were before. But it's annoying. There's even a scale image within him explaining the balance, so that's why I'm like, I don't get where the shield comes in. It just seems like a weird component of your powers that's awfully specific and seems to even go beyond what your powers should do. Of like, oh, well, I could turn misfortune back at you after I take it. He's like, no, actually the misfortune goes into the shield to start with, so I don't feel anything. And then I send it back at you twice because the whatever would have sent towards me is one, and then the shield is two. I'm rubber,
you're glue.
But there's two of me, so I reflect double the glue back at you.
Bang, bang, you're dead. No, 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 you missed.
And now I shoot 17 bullets back at you, like, I fucking hate you.
I have 90 magna cannons on my arms, and I shoot you with all of them, and they have laser scopes on them, so I can't miss. Well, but I have a bulletproof vest. No, I have bulletproof vest penetrating bullets.
Yeah, stupid.
Yes, Ishida reveals his shrift ability, which is antithesis, which is basically be the balance. Because he says, yeah. Like, yes, I have, you know, it reverses events that have just taken place between two designated points, so I reversed our wounds. And Hashimoto's like, well, yes, but I have be the balance, so it goes in my shield, and then I put that misfortune back on you anyway.
Okay.
So their powers are the same, except he has a shield. His is better.
Yeah, I was gonna say, first and foremost, all three of these fucking powers are the same. I have the ability to undo what you just did and then fuck with you, essentially. Just different variations of the same thing.
I can manipulate the future. I can manipulate what just happened. I can manipulate what just happened.
Yeah. Two, I didn't think the fucking shifts worked like that. I thought that they were kind of a sort of vaguely predetermined thing. I thought there was going to be a lot more pomp and circumstance to the fact that Yuhabak gave Uryu A, being, oh, you get my power, not some other fucking unrelated power that just happens to start with the same fucking letter, because that's boring and horseshit. That's why is there a huge ceremony for it?
This is why there are 27 Sternritters, Chris.
Yeah, you could have called this Seed the Comeback, fucking, like, or the Revenge. There's a billion fucking letters. The fact that it starts with A as well does not make it worthy of being this big fucking ceremony to pass it down to him.
It's like, Ishida, I thought that yours was supposed to be the super awesome one, but his is just yours, but better!
He's a shield! He don't have anything! He's like, well...
And he gets to hold the Almighty half the time! God, you suck, Ishida! Yuhabak's like, we have trained him wrong on purpose, as a joke.
Well, fuck with him. It is hilarious. He thought he was special.
I use headbutt your knee style.
Oh my god. It's such a dumb chapter.
We then cut back to Yuhabak and Ichigo. Yuhabak picks up Ichigo by the head and he's like, oh, are you giving up already, Sissibar? Come on. Ichigo's like, oh no, my sword does nothing. Inoue's shield does nothing. It's over. And Yuhabak says, well, this is fun. Anyway, taking my power back from you. And that's the end of the chapter. Because remember, he can just do that. He can just take Quincy powers. Can't believe you didn't see that coming, Ichigo.
Is this a different variation of when he, like, summoned giant things of light that killed them, though?
This is different, I think. I think that it might be more akin to when he controlled Ichigo's body to force him to kill the Soul King.
Oh, right.
Because we see Blute Vein, you know, surging across his face as Yuhabak head palms him.
Who saves the day, Nick? Someone has to come in.
Ganju?
Not Chad?
No, wait. Afro Shinigami, who's stationed in Karakura Town.
I say Don Kanoji. Like, I think he's even a level smaller than the Afro Samurai. To that level of, like, I will fight you, and just the Yuhabak's like, I never foresaw a future where something this stupid would have happened. I cannot combat this!
Keigo's sister, who had a crush on Ikkaku.
That's an obscure. That's a tight pull. I'll give it to you. If she shows up, you get a serious amount of brownie points out of that.
Even if she just shows up at all, I think I deserve credit. Because even if she's just like in a cutaway scene to where people are doing normal things in Karakura Town, like, Mizuhiro and Keigo and Tatsuki are all like, hey, remember that time we found out about the Shinigami and it looked like there was gonna, like, stuff was gonna happen to us and we just kept on sitting around here?
Remember when you were supposed to be, like, a big deal in karate? She's like, eh, maybe I am. I don't know.
Remember when you were built up because you could kick Ichigo's ass?
Yeah. They hinted at the fact that all of you were slowly developing spiritual powers? Yeah, but then Kubawa had to come up with a whole bunch of other powers that are also worthless when you think about it, so...
Yeah, you can't even handle Chad and Rihime, so what's the point, really?
Yeah, there's no time for a Tatsuki, your fucking headphone kid.
Alright, let's move on to Fairy Tail, which might be even worse.
Yeah, so...
You had such faith, Chris.
I shouldn't have. Fairy Tail, chapter 491.
Isn't this like what happened, like, isn't this like the inverse of what happened last week?
This is, I mentioned last week. Alright, well, let's dig into this. Last week, the continent was shifted all over the place. Different characters ended up in different places, and at the end of it, we saw Gajio wandering around a forest, and he found the other fairy that was in that Fairy Tail spinoff with Mavis. And at the moment, we didn't know what had happened, and I theorized maybe he is actually dead. Maybe he is dead, or this is some kind of weird purgatory, or something, a spiritual plane. Maybe this is something like that, because they couldn't possibly go with the stupidest, laziest, easiest explanation of, well, when the continent reshifted, you just weren't in the death portal anymore. Lucky you!
Guess what?
Yeah. I opened my big dumb mouth and said, I really hope they won't go with that. I have hopes that this time it won't be that stupid and easy. But lo and behold, the lowest common denominator answer won through yet again. And that is exactly what happened. Gajio was saved because the continent shifted, and for some reason, a portal which doesn't touch the ground in any way, shape, or form separated. Despite the fact that characters who were in the same place traveled with one another, for some reason, Gajio just wasn't in the portal anymore when that shifted. Also, I guess the anti-magic particles just don't matter now. Or maybe he just stopped being poisonous. I don't know. It's dumb. I expected Gajio to come back. I did not for a moment believe he wasn't going to. So I'm not upset that they're bringing him back. I'm actually glad. I think this is the one of the few characters who probably does deserve to have more than just life shit on him and be like, fuck you, there's a consequence. I'd want more from that. But this writing, the answer to this dilemma is so lame and stupid that it's just like, why do you bother? Why do you do these cliffhangers if you just do the laziest explanation out of them? This is Makarov's been kidnapped, we'll just teleport over and grab him!
But it's just a bit, because there was like, well, I guess you just happened to teleport away from where you from where you were. So, okay.
Yeah. That's exactly. You looked out. Somebody did magic that warped the world and transferred people to different places. So I assume, just as you were about to enter the afterlife, the magic interfered and sent you here. Quite a coincidence, huh? And, of course, the only reasonable explanation to all this is Gajio being like, oh, I'm embarrassed because I told Levi how I feel about her. Mm-hmm. It's like, I fucking hate this.
I told my girlfriend that I love her. How embarrassing.
What a fool I was.
I told the girl that I want to have babies with that I want to have babies with her. No. Also, I think that Zera's... Because, again, we haven't read Fairy Tail Zero.
Yeah.
Okay? It's full of underage bathing. So...
It's like, if you ever wanted to read a bunch of 11-year-olds in a Yuri manga, here you go. I'm like, well, I'm good.
Yeah, at least they're all of age in Murcielago, thanks. if I understand correctly, Zera is like a figment of Mavis's imagination made real by her super awesome magic or something like that.
Nick, I'm still trying to work my head around what fucking Xanark End is in Final Fantasy X, and I've played enough Kingdom Hearts to know that this is something vaguely similar to that, and if I don't understand Kingdom Hearts, I'm sure as fuck not understanding this small aspect of it. still play through 2, and I'm like, I don't get what Roxas is. What is he?
Basically...
Is he a memory? Is he a heart? What is he?
So because Mavis has reawoken, Zara came back too.
She's like the inverse Freddy Krueger. Like, she gets to live as long as no one remembers her, but the moment one person does, she's like, oh, I'm lost forever! Yeah, she's not a very entertaining character either. She basically just kind of exists to be like, the island that was our hometown is now a peninsula. Mavis is awake and I can feel it. It's gonna vanish, but, you know, I think we can all team up together and we'll defend it. And yeah. Really, there's not much to the rest of this chapter.
No, it's just a bunch of people, like, reacting to being in different places.
Fucking again. Irene turns the princess into a rat, which is something, yeah. But I was like, I don't even remember these characters.
It's like 4 pages dedicated to Hisui, or however the fuck you say her name, the princess of Fior, being turned into a mouse. And then she looks outside, and she uses some sort of giant enchantment that summons a huge eye so she can look at everyone. And she sees Urza, and she's like, she has red hair! It couldn't be. Maybe she's an Uzumaki. And that's it.
Yeah, and then fucking Makarov's really big, and I guess that hurts people. They're like, ah!
All of you have no name, so I can beat you up!
Yeah, I was like, oh boy, one of us had a name, we can beat him up immediately! And then Irene's, like, fucking Yuri bait lieutenants show up, and one of them has slime powers, and the other one has vine powers, so I imagine they're gonna fight Lucy, and there's just gonna be a lot of BDSM, slimy, fetish nonsense between them. Mira Jane, because they focus on her, so it'll probably be her.
What was it that you theorized that you, that was going to be the big fetish that Hero put in this series? Because when I called there's going to be a tomboy and that train hasn't come home, you made a prediction too.
I feel like, was it spiders?
I think that was it.
I feel like spider, like a fucking...
Because there could be a bondage element.
Yeah, you could put that...
He's going for, like, every form of bondage possible.
Yeah.
Before he goes to spider, apparently.
Maybe he's terrified of spiders. Anyway, there really is nothing else to say about this chapter.
Zara uses communication magic to say, I know that Mavis is like a mother to you all. And I'm like,
this
really?
This horseshit line, too. Mavis is like a mother to all of you. She's in trouble. I'm like, look, I respect a lot of... Like, I respect the people who came before me and helped build the school that I went to. I'm not going to be like, they're like a father to me. You know, the person I didn't know. Like, I don't know. It's just a weird thing. She's like a mother to all of you. Like, I don't...
Mavis has only been in this series for, like, since that one tournament, hasn't she?
Yeah, essentially since the time skip, because she appeared...
Like she's been looking over all of them the whole time. Like,
I mean, even technically she has in a way, but she didn't actually start appearing until halfway through.
Even Makarov, you know, if people are like, you know, he's like a father to you, I was like, at least he's been around the whole time.
Yeah.
He might be incompetent at his job, but he clearly means a lot to them. He's been around the whole time, and we've seen him actually interact with the characters a whole lot. Mavis, we didn't really see a lot from her until she became a very important plot character.
Has she?
Since the time skip.
Actually done anything? Because I'm trying to think if she's actually done anything either within her time. I know she's there to, like, provide support and be, like, kind of like a guide on some things that are bigger than the Gill Baby is. But I'm trying to think of anything she's actively done either that would be like, well, that was a huge event. Because, like, she didn't do anything when they all went their separate ways after the Gill got destroyed, did she?
No. She didn't help to bring them back together. She never had a moment where she provided, you know, like, meaningful advice to a person. Occasionally she said, like, I think that we should do this. But it's not like someone ever came to her because they were at a crossroads in their life and she talked to them and provided them with comfort or anything. We've seen that out of other characters in the series, but never from her.
Yeah, I'd almost say, like, maybe Gildart would be, like, closer to a parental figure than them, because at least he's been there to help out Kana and Natsu.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It's a bad chapter. I'm just saying,
like, show, don't tell.
Yeah.
You know, you tell me that Mavis is important, and I'm supposed to believe you. Why is Mavis important? Because she's like a mother to them. Really? Because I've never seen an example of her being like a mother. I'm just going off of your word that that's how they see her.
This chapter probably would have been a lot better had it not had the Gajeel stuff in it, because it put me in a shitty mood just for the first moment of reading it. It was like, God damn it, Hero!
Well, I had that shitty mood last week, and this time I was just like, well, I was right. And then I kept, and then I moved on, and that part still really does bug me. Just that one line, like, this is why Mavis is so important to you, so I know that you have to come back to her. And they're like, yeah, we're definitely gonna do it. We're gonna go save our mom.
Question mark? Yeah, so that's fairy tale.
Yeah. Yeah. Food Wars! Shokuyaki no Suma, chapter 172, to the battlefield! And we open up with the gang arriving in Hokkaido. I actually really like the opening couple of pages, the bit where Bunhead Girl and Soma just flop down in the snow. They're like, oh, snow! It's like, oh, this is like my reaction to snow before I immediately went, oh, God, it's so cold.
This is like you the first 10 seconds after you got off the bus at MAGFest, and you're like, oh, snow! And you're like, oh, snow! Ugh.
It's wet and cold.
Why?
But, you know, I do actually like the note that, you know, all of the people from Polaris are like, oh, let's make a snowman, let's make a snow forest, let's make snow angels and stuff. And then it cuts over, like, well, these three students were in snowy climate, so they're just kind of amused by everyone who's that really super happy. So
I like the sound effects, because Megumi doesn't have one. Alice is like, giggle, giggle, and then Kurikiba just says, days.
He's like, how amused.
I like how, I just like that there's a sound effect for stoic silence.
Arina tries to get them all back on track and says, come on, you guys don't have time to play around. It's funny, cause, it's a little funny because they're calling her Arina Sensei because she's their instructor now. And she's like, nope, go back to calling me Arina, she, fine. Call me that. Don't call me that. Yeah, so she wants them to, of course, stay on track, and we actually have a little bit of a flashback for more info on these advancement exams, and Hisako basically says it's like they're in the Amazing Race.
Yeah, more or less.
Because they have to accomplish tasks at different locations and progress towards the further north. In Hokkaido.
They have to make sure they balance out their roadblocks so that one member of their team isn't going to be overbalanced on the other. And then they have to really decide if they're going to use the detour or not. The U-turn in particular can be just a real game changer, because you don't know if dude's using it's going to kind of bite you in the butt later on.
Also, the language barrier can be a real problem. One time I was watching that show, they got in a cab and literally drove away from their destination because the cab driver didn't speak good English.
Ah, oh, I do like The Amazing Race. I never watched the one season with the where they had families on, and I wish I had, because they had a black family on there who was the black family. And I guess it's only worth it to see when they get eliminated. He's like, black family, I'm sorry, but you have been eliminated from the race.
So their family name was Black.
Yeah, they were the Blacks. Yeah, but I think they were like one of the only black family in the actual race that year.
Oh, God. We then get an explanation as to why they were calling her Arina Sensei, which is Arina had a fetishy school teacher outfit for some goddamn reason.
You don't have one of these, Nick?
This one lying around.
I have at least two of these with a few different pairs of stockings to go with it.
Stockings, short skirt, high heels, glasses, like fucking a riding crop. Jesus Christ.
The glasses are what really amused me, because it's not like she has glasses otherwise. She owns these only for the costume.
Arina has apparently been reading a very particular type of manga lately.
I just like the idea. She's like, no, I own this pencil skirt. The heels kind of go with a couple different other outfits. But I just bought the glasses to complete the fetish costume. I'd look stupid otherwise.
Oh, God. They also had a little bit of, actually, Azami teaching a class, which I thought was interesting, This is the first time we've actually seen him actually in the present, actually cooking for people and teaching students. And it's very creepy, though, because all the students who are observing have this very blank-eyed expression while they're listening to him. This sunken-eyed expression, they're devoutly following him. We get a little bit of insight into some of the lessons that Irina was teaching everybody, including, you must learn all the different varieties of potatoes which are cultivated in Hokkaido. And they're like, why?
And that's when fucking Sam from Lord of the Rings pops in. He's like, boil them, mash them, stick them in the stew, you got him all the base of potatoes!
Which potatoes, he likes it raw.
Anyway. There is a nice little bonding moment where Irina is saying, like, you know, you have to study too, Zoma, in order to make sure that you pass. I forget what exactly he says. Because, like, he's not taking part in the studies at first, and then she calls him in. And then she says, look, all of you need to pass, just like we've always done. And, you know, we've got to defeat Central, and if anyone can do that, it would be all of you. But she pays, you know, him special mind while she's doing that. And then they have another conversation later on. And Soma says, like, oh, wow, you're working really hard for our sakes in order to help us out. And Irina says, you know, because she's talking about, oh, I guess, you know, we're all counting on you to, you know, get us through to the second year. And Irina says, well, I'm expecting the same from you. You know, you're acting like this is someone else's problem. But, hey, you're on the chopping block, too. You have to pass. And Soma is joking around. He's like, ah, really? You know, you care about me passing? You know, way back in Hell Camp, you said, I can't wait to watch you fail. And he's like, seriously, stop joking around. I'm different than I was back then, and I can't stand the thought of people at this dorm being expelled. I won't allow that to happen. And she thinks about, you know, spending time with the friends that she's made there, and she thinks about when she related Soma to Joichiro recently, and she wraps it up by saying, we are all going to become second-year students together. You got it? And Soma says, yeah, I do.
I like that whole thing a lot. I like it, you know, because we've... Apparently there's fucking swimming finals going on, so my mom's apparently super shocked. You might hear her in the background. But the scene itself I like a lot, because it does show the growth that Erin has had from the beginning. Like, just the way she kind of explains it. Like, I'm different then from, you know, what I was then. And you see it really well in this scene. I mean, we're, what, on chapter... 172, so this series hasn't been gunning that long, but you can see, like, the huge difference from Irina, from start of the series to now. And I really love that last line she has about, you know, we're all going to become second students together. It shows how she is melting, but it's a really well-written line, because it still carries across that authoritative, dominant personality that Irina has, just with the way she phrases it. It's an order that she's giving them. But at the same time, it's, you know, very much like, no, I can't, nobody can be left behind on this. We're all going to become, you know, first year, second years together. But I just like the way that it still carries across who Irina is at her heart, but shows that she has grown quite a lot.
Irina's character development, honestly, like, in the last few chapters has been very good, because she's been so well established up to this point, and you can see how different she is while she is still definitely the same character. Mm-hmm. She hasn't gone through so dramatic a shift that you can't even recognize her from the person she was before. So, and the rest of the chapter is cutting around to the different members of the Council of Ten as they all make their way to Hokkaido as well. You know, the people who are a part of Central are traveling together, but also Ishiki is making his way there. Kuga is with the Chinese Food Society. They're making their way up. Hat Guy, who we still don't know anything about, is on his way as well. He's talking to someone that we don't see on the phone.
Just the dude who we know is the other member of the council that did not vote for Azami to take over.
And of course, Irina is traveling with a Polaris Storm. And there is this great little moment where... As they're making their way up to Hokkaido on a bus, they're like, oh, welcome to Hokkaido, first-year students. It's time for your advancement exams. You'll be traveling north over the course of these exams. And you'll be taking this huge tour across the region. Now, by the way, look out the window to your right. See those buses over there? If you fail, we're going to send you packing to the Institute immediately so you can be expelled.
I love...
Okay, good luck!
Somewhere in the administrative meetings of the Totsuki Institute, there is a discussion that's like, all right, guys, what can we budget out for extravagant theatrics? Well, we're going to need at least $300 to send an empty bus up with the students that's just there to scare them to be like, we're sending you on this. Despite the fact we could just send you back on buses there, we're just going to drive an empty bus up to Hokkaido to scare kids. If I could ever make a spinoff of Food Wars, I want it to be the comedy spinoff of just the dude in accounting who's just like, how much money did we spend fucking sending the bus up?
Oh, God. Well, that's it then. Yeah, it looks like the next chapter, or at least very soon, we're going to get this Tour du Nord arc going. I look forward to it. Like I said before, you know, these things tend to be a chance to get a closer look at some of the other students in the class, aside from just Soma. Give them a chance to shine.
Yes. I have high hopes for this arc.
Let's move on then to My Hero Academia. It's chapter 96. Last time, by the way, before we move in, I really, really like the cover page. It's a cool cover page of Deku and Toshinori sitting together, and Toshinori's wearing his All Might uniform, but of course it doesn't fit him at all, so it almost looks like he's wearing, like, casual clothes.
Like baggy pajamas or something like that. Sad way. I think my favorite color page is in Jump nowadays, and I love my One Piece ones and things like that, but I think my favorite color pages are when the cover page to My Hero Academia resembles, like, a comic book cover, complete with, like, the logo in the top left-hand corner, the issue number kind of there, a fake barcode. I mean, actually, it might be a real barcode. I haven't tried scanning it, but I just love the way those always look. I'd love to see, like, a collection of those.
It's a really well-done picture, too, because they're sitting beneath a tree, and you can see the spots of light from light filtering between the leaves on the bench and on Toshinori's head, face, and stuff. Looks really cool. Anyhow, we get a lot of the fallout from the recent clash between the Society of Villains and the Heroes in this. We get this news announcer talking about how the Hero Billboard chart, JP, has really been shaken up lately because Toshinori, you know, All Might announced, yeah, he's done. He can't be a hero anymore. He's retiring. They also say that Best Genist is going to be out of commission for a while, and Ragdoll has been forced to take an indefinite leave because her quirk can't be used anymore. And it's a great little panel that follows up on that.
It's fucking heartbreaking. I'm shocked they didn't give more time to this, because just that one shot, you're like, oh.
It's the Pussycats out of uniform comforting her. She's crying because she can't use her power anymore.
Coda's looking on from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And she was always kind of the weirdest member of the Pussycats. Like, she had the very, like, kind of, like, spacey, ditzy kind of attitude. And then seeing her there, like, crying, like, oh, that's so cute. Like, Tiger out of makeup. Like, all of them out of the costume. It's very humanizing. It's just there to make you be like, yeah, these heroes are sad.
They also have a discussion at the school with Toshinori. The principal has called he and Blood and Aizawa together in our Takedo. And he points out, you know, we're incredibly grateful for what you did. You made a huge sacrifice. You saved countless lives. But there has been a lot of criticism that's been thrown around. They're thinking, well, how is All Might still going to teach at this academy when he can't fight? Wouldn't that be just a danger to students? So we have to implement some changes. We have to basically convince people again that the students are going to be safe here. So We will be implementing a plan I've been ruminating on for quite some time. Vlad and I will handle Class B with as many casualties. All Might and Eraserhead will deal with Class A. Good luck with the home visits. And he puts forward this form that says, concerning the impending UA dormitory system. And I really, really like the rest of this chapter because it's a lot of Toshinori and Aizawa going around to the different students' homes from Class A and talking with their parents and basically saying, hey, you know, will you let the students actually stay on campus so that we can keep a closer eye on them? And so we get a little bit of insight into their home lives.
We don't see many kids. There's only three kids actually focused on this chapter, but all of them...
Because Toshinori and Aizawa part ways pretty quickly.
But it's a pretty interesting look into what we get. I mean, the first one's the Ear Jack Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a ton there. You know, you get to see that her dad's, you know, looking out for her, but both of them are both like, no, we're super excited. We're not giving up. We want to be in the academy. But it's like how they show it, like her dad is like the ultimate rock star, and if you look over, her mom is like the uptight librarian, proper like posture. She doesn't even look like Arina from the last chapter in the school, like the teacher outfit. I don't know if I approve of the daughter's shirt says deep dope with an arrow pointing to her crotch. I feel like if I were her father, I'd be like, I don't know about this one.
I really like the back and forth that they have with Kyoka's dad, where he's like, you know, my daughter still got hurt, and now you're talking about dorms like nothing ever happened. I mean, you know, I don't know if I can really trust you. And as always, you'll be very, very calm and submissive. He's, you know, bowing his head. He's like, you know, will you please trust us with this? And Kyoka's like, well, you know, all right. But then Kyoka actually comes in and he's like, you don't have to actually talk to him like that. He actually made the decision as soon as he got that in the mail. So he's totally fine with it.
I like the way she explains it. She's like, nah, he's fine with it. He saw me on the TV. He's like, with this walking dude teacher teaching my daughter, she'll be as awesome as Brian the Sun. He was even crying.
Just then, like, I'm trying to look like a good, concerned parent here. One thing that I didn't even realize about Kyoka's design up to now is she's got, what do you call it? The visual representation of a sound wave in her hair.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's a cool design.
She's a character I really would love to see more. I think that's why I like this part of the chapter so much, is just because I like seeing more of her. But she's one of the characters that I was like, eh, it's kind of an interesting sort of angle. It's a power you don't see used much. I'd be curious to see this character get a little bit more spotlight. Not enough to, I'm like, make her a main cast member, but anytime we get a little focus on her, I always appreciate it.
And then we get them visiting Bakugo, which is not surprising in the least that happens. And you can tell that he's really a lot like his mom. Like, I'm not sure, I'm not entirely sure the dad had anything to do with his conception. I think she might have just, like, cloned him.
I think she was essentially like fisting herself with a grenade and just got pregnant off of that. Just that's how the baby was born. Because I love that the first shot of it's like, oh, let's see how this goes. And the opening shot is her smacking Bakugo in the back of the head and being like, sounds like a great idea! Dormitories!
She's just smacking around constantly. It's like, you keep on getting into trouble. Stop it! We're trying to make you into a proper hero here! Obey their orders! And the father's just like, stop this. They're trying to help us out. But she does eventually calm down and say, you know, Katsuki is always so rash. Almost everything comes so easy to him. People keep on making fuss about him, and they praise him for everything he does. So when you said what you did at the press conference, I thought, oh yeah, UA really understands this, our kid. You know, and even though we were worried about his safety, you brought him home safe and sound. So we have faith in you. Yeah, so work him hard, make him a good hero. We trust you. And sorry for how troublesome he is.
I like this line a lot, too. There's something, I don't know why I'm not a parent, not that I know of, but that's a sentiment, too, that I can completely get, where a parent's like, I was so glad to hear at the press conference because I really, I feel that you really understand my son. and that it's going to be a good thing for him to be with you. I think there's really, like, a tremendous relief in that as a parent, if you have a son who's wild or like Bakugo like that, to have, you know, an authoritative figure here. Like, this person gets my kid, though. Like, they see the good in him. They see how he can be. Because I think as readers, too, we see Bakugo and we tend to think, like, this kid's, like, such a shithead. Like, he's you know, so mean to people. But I like seeing a teacher who can see the value in them beyond that. Maybe it was because I was a bit of a bad kid, too, myself, and I think my mom always...
Oh, you were a bad boy? Always riding your motorcycle around?
Yeah, I was, like, in third grade, like, riding into school, like, just gonna park this in class, teach, try not to wake me up when we talk about that boring Jesus shit, clunk. Pussy! Booze! Heroin!
We also get a cool little scene afterward. Oh, before I actually move on to that, I just want to know, I really do like that recognition of Aizawa as one of the teachers, too. Because the principal specifically says, you know, All Might and Aizawa are kind of looking after these kids. And Aizawa is the head teacher of Class A and has been for basically the entire series. But All Might has been more the focus for Deku's teacher, their master-disciple relationship. And that's been more and more the focus, and is presumably going to be more the focus as we move on with this. So having Bakugo's parents recognize Aizawa and then following it up with this conversation that Bakugo has with Toshinori seems to indicate that maybe Aizawa will start to play a more important role specifically for Bakugo as we go ahead. Maybe not necessarily, but I do like the recentering of Aizawa as the teacher for all of these kids.
No, definitely. Also, I think it's kind of interesting that Bakugo looks like he's wearing a Discount Punisher t-shirt.
Yeah.
Because at first I was like, oh yeah, he definitely liked the Punisher. And then I stopped and I was like, actually, he probably wouldn't like the Punisher, because although the Punisher's cool, he's not a very good hero.
No, he's not.
I mean, I guess he always beats the bad guys, but...
by shooting them in the head.
Yeah.
I think it's just because...
Who do you think Bakugo's favorite superhero would be? I assume Superman, and if I had to make it Marvel, I guess Captain America.
His favorite hero is All Might, so I think it would be Superman.
If I had to keep it just to Marvel, though, I guess maybe Captain America then. Same sort of principles.
Maybe.
But I don't know how much the power aspect applies into it.
That is a good point. It's weird to determine the most powerful character in Marvel, because there's, like, a whole bunch you can point to.
Yeah.
So, there is a moment where Bakugo just goes outside and calls out to All Might, and he says, so, what is Deku to you? And Toshinori has to think about it for a moment, and he thinks to himself, I'm sorry, I can't tell you the truth. And so he's like, you know, he's my student, you know, just like you. He's a hero with potential. But he says, I'm sorry, I can't tell you this to you. And Bakugo starts to head back inside because his mom is calling for him. And he says, look, if you don't want to tell me, that's fine. Thanks. And it's just a kind of an awkward moment of tension. Because he knows that his hero is keeping something from him. And that's got to be a really big deal for him, considering how much he idolizes and looks up to All Might for, you know, my big hero doesn't trust me with something.
I think it's going to be interesting, too, because I feel like the last arc did a little bit to really humanize Bakugo's relationship with All Might, too, because now he's, as well as the rest of the world, seen him as the weak person, and, you know, and I don't know if it's open news yet, but I have to assume, so if he's retired, that he's not. Like, All Might's done. Mm-hmm. So I wonder how that's going to kind of change his viewpoint of All Might, because...
Yeah.
Strength was a predominant factor of why he always won. So for a guy who can't now, it's going to be kind of interesting to see. Even in that one shot, it doesn't look like he's angry. He just looks really sad.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting development, I think, we can get out of this.
Character point of view is always very important. You know, having insight into one character and not knowing what another is thinking. So, All Might and Aizawa part ways, and Toshinori heads to the Midoriya's house, although apparently Aizawa was going to handle every other student from that point on. I really like the fact that Deku's mom is all dressed up, and Deku is wearing a t-shirt that reads dress shirt.
I really, like, once I saw it, I was like, I need to buy this shirt. Wear it into work. To someone's wedding, they're like, what the fuck? You're like, it's a dress shirt.
And there's a funny moment as Toshinori is looking around, he's seeing all these posters they have of All Might around, and Deku's mom is freaking out, and says, All Might's in her house! And they sit down, and they discuss the dormitory system, and right away, Mama Midoriya says, no. And Deku says, well, you said you were okay with this yesterday. And she says, no. I mean, I've been thinking about it. I'm not sure about this. And Izuku used to be quirkless. He admired you. But since he developed a quirk and enrolled, he keeps on getting hurt. And even now, you know, Deku is recovering from the battle that they had with the villains. And they're still bandaged up. And she says, if he injures it again, he might lose his arm forever. Which saw your fight on...
Pretty appropriate considering All Might lost his arm in that battle.
And she says, I saw your fight on TV. I'm very grateful for what you've done. But as a parent, I'm scared. Izuku looks up to you. Is he headed for a future like yours where he'll get beaten up that badly? And we get... two flashbacks, one that we have definitely seen before. I don't know if we've seen the first one. It's adorable, like the little kid Deku dressed up like All Might going to pretend to save his mom, and then later on the scene in the first chapter where he just broke down and cried because he realized he was never going to be a hero and she was just saying I'm sorry. And she says, you know, he used to get all this joy from watching heroes do their work, even when he didn't have any powers. So, can't he just go back to that? Can't he just go back to watching from afar and admiring them and being safe and not getting hurt? I mean, I'll always support you, Deku. But I always get worried, too. And it's really weird, because Deku was thinking to himself that, you know, this is it. You know, she's not going to let me go. I won't be able to continue at the academy. And it's so crazy, but it's so effective, this scene where, you know, you think about the trials and tribulations that Deku's ever come up until now, you know, fighting Stain, fighting the power-up guy, going and rescuing Bakugo. And his greatest adversary is the fact that his mom won't let him go to school anymore. And this has been built up over the course of, like, the entire series, just little moments of her getting worried over him. And now she's standing determined, I'm going to protect my kid and not let him go get hurt anymore. And she can't trust him.
It's a great... I've made mention more than a couple times on the show that Deku's mom, when she gets really sad and worried about him, just breaks my heart every time. Like, it just tears me apart. And this chapter is really, you know, it's good at doing that. Just like the effective use of those two panels to show flashbacks really drive home her feelings and emotions in a way that captures everything you need to do, but so quickly and so effortlessly. Like in two panels, one of which we've already seen, you're just like, oh, I see how this woman always has admired her son for his, you know, ideals of heroism and how hurt she was when he couldn't do anything. But how it hurts her even more to see him with these powers and him constantly being injured as a cause to them.
And it's not like at the beginning when he became a hero, she was like, oh, you'll get hurt now.
No.
It was from seeing him getting beaten up and getting hurt that her feelings have changed.
Time and time again. I mean, this arc, the last arc they just finished with All for One, was special because it was the only time Deku finished an arc without being heavily injured by it. And what's really kind of great about this is it's a dramatic conflict that's brought up, and no one seems irrational, no one seems like they're inserting a conflict just for the sake of drama. I completely understand why Deku's mom is like, I love my son, I know he wants to be a hero, but as his mother, I can't in good conscience let him go back to that school. And there's no reason, like, you can't look at it and be like, oh, what a bitch, right? Like, you're like 100%. Like, she has a perfect, you know, reason for her to believe this. And it's nice to see a mother, a parent in Shonen Jump who's actually there and caring about their kid.
And the expressions that she has as the chapter is winding down, you know, just seeming calm at first, but that goes more and more, and she thinks more and more about it. Getting that, you know, the look of just sadness as she remembers, as she realizes that she's basically crushing her kid's dream. But then, and she's crying as she does it, because she knows that she's going to hurt him by doing this. But even so, she's, you know, biting her lip, and she's completely determined to protect him.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's an incredibly interesting development, and it's nice to see it get to this point as well, because we've seen Deku's mom, and, you know, her looks of sadness, and, like, the letters she'd write to her son when he's in the hospital, and that desperation.
Can't you just stop being a hero?
Yeah. So seeing it all kind of culminate with her having the option of pulling him out of it, she's going to take it. Mm-hmm. I have to imagine All Might may say something to sway her mind, but it's nice to see that her compassion as a mother is still there in full effect.
Yeah, we haven't heard... Toshinori didn't say anything at all while she was talking about this. We haven't heard him rebut anything yet. There is still, you know, the chance that he'll do that. Obviously, Deku is going to go back to being a hero in some form.
He's like, no, this is the end of Deku. Like, wow, this is so weird.
But we'll have to see exactly what happens to play out. Even if it's just he convinces her somehow, it'll be interesting to see what he says.
Yeah. It's a very, very good chapter. I think there's a reason why it's winning the poll handily, but like 30%.
Well, My Hero Academia wins like every poll.
It does.
Let's talk a little bit about Nisekoi, chapter 223, Tables Turned. Last time, Sugumi defeated Claude, and... I'm sorry. Such a fucking goofy one. You can see where it's going as Claude, you know, builds up to it. But basically, he says, you know, why do you want her, why are you okay with, you know, Mistress Kirisaki going off with that weak, soft guy? Why? Don't you have any desire of your own? And she's like, wait, what are you talking about? I knew that this would happen one day. I knew you would defeat me one day, and I would tell you this, the secret lurking in my heart. I believe you and the mistress together could make the beehive stronger. What are you talking about? Don't you understand? I want you to marry the mistress. Just the expression that follows up on this. Sugumi's fucking face.
I don't know why I love her response to it so much of like, of course, because it's like a fan service-y series at points. It has to have her like rip open her shirt to show her boobs. But I love, it's not even the focal point of it. It's just from far away, you can see her posing with her like ripped open shirt. Just like the proudest, like, I have boobs!
Because even before that, just like she's just kind of standing in shock for a bit from this. Like, and Claude's going on, he's like, I've raised you as my own son. I'm so proud of you. There will be no problem with my approval. You can marry her. But why are you laughing? And then she rips her shirt open.
And like, even his reactions are great, where his thoughts like, when did you get surgery? It's just therapy, like, you can't be this dumb.
Since when did this... Since I was born! Why did you hide this from me? I've been trying to tell you the whole time! Oh, God. But eventually, she's like, look, don't you understand? If you believe in me, if you believe in the mistress like I believe in her, believe in Rakuichiko like she and I do, you know, just believe in us and watch over us, everything will be okay. And Claude finally submits to her. This is, like, the chapter of unexpectedly huge revelations, because it's not the last one that happens. But it was such a fucking funny opening. Fucking loved it. But it's followed up by suddenly Ruri and Shu talking with each other. They're talking about their thoughts on Chizuge and Onodera having feelings for Raku. And Ruri now indicates that she's kind of torn because she's come to befriend Chitoge, so even though she's been rooting for Onodera this whole time, basically it's getting harder because she knows that if Onodera and Raku hook up, Chitoge is going to be heartbroken. And Shu says, well, and I'm neutral on the whole thing. I'm on the side of love. As long as true love prevails, that's all I care about. But then they change topics to talk about Kyoko, their old teacher, and Ruri asks, do you still love her? And Shu says, yes, I do still love her. And I got to confess to her so that I, you know, wouldn't have regrets, even though, you know, she, of course, didn't return my feelings. And Ruri says, yeah, I get it. You know, it's really hard to tell someone that you love them. I mean, I understand that now, and I understand how Kasaki's been feeling this whole time. And now I have to deal with those feelings, too. And she's like, oh, you've got a crush on someone, Ruri? Who's the lucky guy? It's you. And
instantly, all of Nick's shipping dreams came true.
Oh, I'm so happy! But going a little bit more deep analysis before I just go, yay!
Nick's clapping a minute straight.
It got me to think, because Ruri says something that got me to think, which is oh, that's the first time I've ever seen you lose your cool. And come to think of it, we've talked about Komi Naoshi's ability to draw faces very effectively, and every time that we've seen Shu show up, the only time he's looked even the slightest bit unnerved has been when he was thinking about Kyoko, and even then he managed to cover it up and put on a face, even if it wasn't very convincing. But he's always this mischievous, perverted, happy-go-lucky comic relief character, and as soon as Ruri confesses to him, and she goes on, she's, you know, very, you know, calm about it. She says, you know, whenever you get past your feelings for Ms. Kyoko, maybe you could, you know, think about me and we could try something. And he's just like, And Ruri's just like, you lost your cool finally. But that's completely accurate. This is like the first time we've seen him that way before. So I really like the scene. And it's presumably very different than all of this super huge helicopters flying around, promise made 10 years ago drama going on with the main plot. Just a girl confessed to a guy and he doesn't know how to react to him. That's it. Oh, and Marika and Chitoge are going to talk next chapter, I guess. I really like this chapter because it focused on things that I didn't think were going to get any attention.
Yeah.
From all my favorite characters. One Piece.
One Piece.
Chapter 830. A Man You Can Bet On. We start off with a little bit of a flashback to Jinbei discussing things with his crew before he went to talk to Big Mom about stuff. And there are little bits and pieces here and there that we learn about their situation. In particular, why one of the things that, you know, Jinbei is subservient to Big Mom over, which is the fact that apparently one of the many lovers that Big Mom has taken over the years was a fish man, and or a mermaid, whatever you want to call it. And so her 29th daughter is Charlotte Praline, who is a half-mermaid hammerhead. Which, I like how the fact that she is a hammerhead is in her hairstyle.
Big dorky style, yeah.
Although it's kind of a sweet little moment that she has with Aladdin, her husband, which is the link between Jinbei's crew and her family. Because they're, like, super lovey-dovey, and she flat-out says, look, if you're gonna leave Mama's crew, and she gets angry, don't think you're gonna leave me behind! I'm gonna come with you! He's like, aww.
Yeah, because she has this intense expression and, like, this wild look to her.
You think you're going to leave me behind over this? No, I was going to tell you. Well, you don't need to talk to me. Of course I'll choose you over her, you big doofus. And all of his crewmates are like, aww.
Yes, and they're right. It's a female character who doesn't just look like Nami. You are absolutely right.
It would have been a little bit difficult to make her look like Nami, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's got the shark teeth in her mouth and stuff.
The freckles help a lot, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Lipstick.
Jinbei, though, brings up a point Do you think that Mama will forgive us for wanting to separate from her? And she's like, well, others have tried it before. Everyone's tried it has died for suggesting it. So, good luck, Jinbei.
She's like, oh, it's fine. You can go. You just have to spin my wheel of death. Like, huh.
I like how there are... there are different body parts drawn on the wheel, and then 10, 100, 1,000. How many times can you have a head ripped off, really?
I'm like, what do the point values mean? Is it like darts? And like, do you like throw darts? You try to get points without landing in the middle, or...
Wheel!
And what happens if you land on her? Does she just kill you? Does she just eat you, I guess?
Does she
eat her? Your best case scenario, I lose a leg?
Also, there is one that is a head, and one that is a head with a crown on it. What does that mean? Well, what's the difference between them?
That's what I meant, is the one with... I think that's supposed to be Big Mom, and I'm like, is the one that's Big Mom mean she just gets to eat you? Do you not want to land on it, or do you want to land on it?
Do you want to land on the exact center, or does that mean that all of them apply to you? but we cut away before we get to see what happens with the roulette. Because basically, the way that Big Mom explains it is, yes, you know, I'm gonna lose quite a bit of power if you leave me, so you'll have to lose something too. Spin the roulette wheel! And that's it before we cut away to the Straw Hats, who are elsewhere in Big Mom's territory, with a bunch of dead sea ants?
Sleeping.
I guess?
The book put them all to sleep, because they wake up at the end of the chapter.
Song. Okay. A bunch of sea ants sleeping in the water, and they're trying to figure out how they can actually dig their ship out, because they're in a sea of syrup, and so the Thousand Sunny is actually stuck in it. Presumably, that's why there are a bunch of ants, because sweetness and stuff.
Yeah.
We get a little bit of backstory shared with the Straw Hats, as Carrot brings up that Pedro and Peckham used to be in a pirate crew together, but Pedro parted ways with him when they realized they were kind of doing bad stuff, and so he left. But Peckham, of course, kept on going on, and he ended up joining with Big Mom's crew and stuff. Pedro also brings up, yeah, I actually used to be in the sea before, and I suffered a devastating defeat here. I've hardly ever told a soul about it. And they say, well, why did you come with us if you have such bad memories associated with this place? Well, I was hoping that we'd be able to get Sanji back with my experiences. Plus, you know, maybe my coming here won't be completely meaningless, because the two kings showed you all the road poneglyph. I was stunned that they trusted you that much. You know, you're our saviors, but you're not members of the Kozuki clan. And it's been 26 years since it was shown to Gold Roger's crew. And after that, Roger made his way to Raftel. So both Dogstorm and the Cat Viper see him and you all. And they believe you were worthy enough. The rope hoglyph will be necessary to you one day. So the long and short of it is, they trusted you that much, so I've decided to dedicate myself to helping your cause.
Yes, ums.
And then the ants wake up! And we cut away.
Yes, I don't think it is...
They got away.
It's a very strange thing for One Piece to have introduced an element like this and then done absolutely nothing with it.
Also, the ants don't have, you know, mandibles. They just have teeth. We then flash forward to the next day as they've made it to whole Cake Island. And that's it. They've reached Big Mom's castle. And they're heading ahead, and then suddenly Luffy is like, there's someone on the shore! And that's the end of the chapter.
Part of me almost has to wonder how much involvement Oda had with this chapter, because this does feel like a strange chapter for him. As I said, like, the ants thing's kind of weird. There's also this really weird line from Brook where he's like, oh, Luffy, I guess that's just the star you were born after, or born under. And it's kind of like a weird drawing for him, but everyone's like, what does that mean? It's kind of cryptic. You get the impression that, you know, Brooke might know more than he's letting on, but it's, I don't know, like a weirdly coy thing for Brooke to say. Mm-hmm. It just kind of feels a bit off for his character. None of it's bad. It just seemed a little weird for things. I don't know. Also, there's a dude behind Carrot in the one panel in armor on the last page. I'm not sure who that is.
Very last page?
Yeah, on the bottom right-hand corner. Behind Carrot.
Yeah. Who the hell is that?
Spears.
Who the hell is that?
Because I was like, oh, maybe it's Nami and she's wearing armor. And I was like, but Nami's in another panel.
Huh.
I don't know. Maybe that's meant to be like a tease. Like, oh, this is a cliffhanger. You just don't realize who it is. It's not Nami. People stop saying it's Nami. It's not Nami. She's right there. Unless she's been cloned.
I don't know.
It might be, like, meant to be a tease to a character supposed to show up next week. Like, it's meant to be like, oh, you didn't notice this character in the background, but I was there. Kind of like that scene, how they actually drew the scene where fucking Mr. Two touched the vice, or I guess it was the actual warden's face and impaled down in one panel, and then he referenced, like, I did that! You just missed it, like, 90 chapters ago.
Could it be... No? I don't know. I really don't know. Unless she changes out of that armor really quickly for some reason.
Why would you put it on?
Exactly, right.
It's Ferris. He got back to the boat as well. It's a great Game of Thrones reference, Gav. I liked it.
Okay. Alright. Yeah, anyway, that's One Piece. Quick little chapter, honestly. Toriko! Chapter 376. I actually don't remember too well what happened in this one. I know there's fighting involved. Gathering of the Eight Kings. Yeah, the Eight Kings gather. We get two pages dedicated to the Eight Kings are gathering. With the capture levels for all of them. They're very high.
I guess the only thing that's worth noting is that the dragon has a higher capture level than the Battle Wolf.
Surprisingly.
Battle Wolf was kind of made note several times that the Battle Wolf was supposed to be the strongest of the kings. So.
And Guinness actually gets its fucking paw eaten off by Neo, too.
Yeah. And I love how its response to that is like, I'm going to bite this fucking, I don't know, imaginary fist or whatever, and then I'm just going to snap you across the ground for like a minute and a half.
You're causing a mushroom cloud because it's just ragging him around so much. And then the dragon opens up its mouth and fires a giant goddamn laser out of it. And even when Joey tries to counter it, it just gets completely blown away.
Oh, that is true. Actually, I guess Moon's technically the strongest by the level. I stopped paying attention because it's a fucking... It doesn't even look like a thing. It just looks like a crater of moons. But I guess its capture level is technically stronger.
Also, Tepe shows up to help out.
Who cares? I don't understand the Tepe character.
Is he under someone's control? Is he not? What's going on?
It's not even that. I just don't get why I'm supposed to care. He was never an interesting character. Of, like, all the weird tertiary side characters in Toriko, I've always felt like Tepe was one of the least interesting. He's the one who gets far and away the most focus. I can't Match show up again, Nick. I want more Match.
Moon shows up and starts swallowing stuff. And that's it. There's so much going on, because even though all of the four kings, aside from Toriko, have been taken out, there are still way too many characters involved in this fight.
Yeah, there's
just cutting around.
There's a shit ton of stuff going on, and it's tough to kind of remember everything that's supposed to be happening. The only thing I guess that was really worth noting is that they literally shot fucking Acacia into space at one point. And I guess he just lands within the chapter. There isn't, like a lot of fanfare to it.
Like Kamehameha with Kaioken times 4 style. He's trapped on my beam, shooting off into space.
Yeah. And I guess he either lands, or maybe this is him in space being like, I need to eat God. I don't know. It's a fine chapter enough, but it'll be nice if things can kind of calm down a bit and we can focus more
on
one thing.
Just focus, you know, not introduce as many things and just, we've got all this stuff going on, and maybe do a couple chapters dedicated to one element of it as opposed to moving things around so much.
It's tough to care about what the dragon can do if in the same chapter I'm seeing Guinness fucking toss around Acacia with his fucking mouth like, "Arr."
Let's do World Trigger. World Trigger! Chapter 148. Osamu Mikimo, Part 15. Osamu and company have gone to the heads of border to try and convince them to let them get Husei on their team. They use logic.
Yeah,
it's a very calm discussion they have. Very logical, pointing out things that Husei can offer to them.
It's actually... This was weird. This was a strange chapter. I know World Trigger is like 90% board meetings, but even for this one, I was like, this is such a simple conversation. Even his argument's really simple. I'm shocked no one at the table has considered it before. His argument's like, why should he join a team? Because he knows, like, the different worlds and would be useful on an away mission. And that's it. Like, he can offer
nothing else. Can't we just get that information from Anadora? No, Anadora wasn't a scout.
No, Anadora is an asshole and he doesn't care. Like, even go to it. Like, I talked to Anadora before just to make sure.
It's like, I don't know. I'm anywhere. Show me Terminator Chanel.
Yeah, play Transformers for me.
No, not that one. The other one.
The good one. Not I was like, there's
how many of these are
there? Is no good one. Don't say the good one. We're going to be for hours trying to figure that one out.
You've got the touch!
But yeah, it's kind of weird, because I'd love to go in depth, but it's a full chapter that essentially boils down to that argument. The only other thing, I guess, to note is that May Hughes is actually kind of argues against them for a moment, because they ask what he would do, and he's like, oh, well, honestly, it seems like he would be detrimental, because you'd always have to be concerned about him and his loyalty or things like that.
And he points out, like, Natsuki, that's kind of surprising that you actually, you know, pointed that out, and he just says, well, I'm all with this man of logic. What are you talking about?
Yes.
He points out, it's risky that he would accompany us, and Osama says, no, because he's a neighbor, he would actually be a great tool for us, and I mean, we can trust him because of these reasons, and the end of the chapter is basically just everyone except for two guys are okay with it, almost. Even Kiyota seems like he's going to agree with this. As the guy who's objecting the most, the really kind of wormy guy, what is his name?
There's
Natsuki.
Fat guy and big nose guy are the only two who I don't think openly support it.
And Kinuta is not saying anything to object to it, so everyone just turns to Kido to see if he raises any objection. And he, of course, has been the person who's been the hardest on Yuma this whole time. And so if he decides against it, then it's all for naught. That's it. They can't really do anything about it.
Yeah.
And we end the chapter on the cliffhanger of if he is going to allow this. That's it.
I'm kind of hoping he says no, and then we get what the actual argument was meant to be from Osamu. Like, I just feel like if you're going to make such a big deal about how Osamu's like the captain and what he can do is he's more important in moments like this than on the battlefield, I'm like, I feel like anybody could have come up with the, motivation of, like, well, he'd be useful for knowing where we're going. He knows the lands. I feel like there has to be more of, like, a convincing argument.
These are the facts.
Like, there has to be more of a swayed argument
I know
things.
I don't know. We've always been on about how World Trigger has this habit of handling things much more logically than you would expect from a shonen battle manga. Maybe this is just their way of doing things for this as well. Instead of having this big dramatic discussion, it's like, remember the pride of the people.
The North remembers! King in the North! King in the North! King in the North! King in the North!
You know, remember your little girl who was killed by neighbors and think about what we can do in order to fight them.
But someone just says, well, he would be an asset to us and we can trust him. So why not? And everyone's gradually like, yeah, he's right, I guess. Okay, I'm okay with it.
Like, I love that is like the logic of World Trigger is very grounded in rational thought. It's just weird to me that this is the big thing. Like, this is like He knows where we're going. And it's like, everyone's like, alright, cool, let's do it. it's just me, like, right, sure. Did no one? I don't know. It just doesn't feel like this was worth a whole chapter and a cliffhanger if it is just, like, him being like, alright, sure. It works, though. It's fine. It's not a bad chapter. I just note that I'm like, I was kind of expecting something a little bit more unconventional, I guess, in a way.
Okay, that's it. That's the Rikimanga recap.
That's it, we're done.
two not too much happened chapters in a row, so sorry about that. But
it's like, let's change it on the fly. Let's just add on My Hero Academia or Food Wars or something.
MVPs and Series of the Week. My Series of the Week is Nisekoi, because it was a chapter Cater made for me.
All they need is for, like, at the end, for Gajio and Levy to also show up, and they're like, double date! So they all go to see...
Suddenly Raku's changed his mind, and he wants to date Tsugumi.
And they all decide to finish off their day by watching Avatar The Last Airbender. The cartoon show, of course! As the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have just won the Super Bowl, as they like drive by behind them, like woo!
Hey, we re-signed Steven Stamkos to the Lightning too. This is a good day for Nick.
Like the chapter just ends with all the characters fist pumping at the screen, going Nick, 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 Nick.
Look, Nick, we got you brown sugar cinnamon Pop Tarts.
You're like, oh my god, how did it came out of the screen? This is incredible.
Okay. What's your series?
I'm actually going to do my MVP first. My MVP is Deku's mom, which is a bit odd because I don't know if she has a name besides Deku's mom. Does. Okay. Well, whatever her name is, it's that. I know her as Deku's mom, which again is weird because Deku isn't even part of her name. It's his superhero name that I'm just applying to it. It'd be like saying Superman's mom instead of Clark Kent's mom.
Well, her... Inko is her name.
Inko? Alright. There you go.
Midoriya.
Inko. So she's my MVP, and my chapter of the week is actually going to be Black Clover. I thought it was an excellent chapter all the way through. I thought it was exceptionally well done art. It was some of the strongest stuff the series has done, and it's one of those, again, a good example of how much stronger I feel that series can be when it takes a moment to step away from Asta and shows us more of the supporting cast and gives them just cool, compelling things to kind of get behind.
Yeah.
And this is not an ironic thing. I'm not picking it because I'm like, oh, what a bad week. I legitimately thought this was a great chapter for World Trigger or Black Clover.
And I chose Midoriya Mama as well. She had a very unexpected but very welcome chapter carrying moments. It was a good chapter in general, and it won our reader poll for the 9th time in a row.
Jesus.
We have had nothing but My Hero Academia win since the end of April.
I
two full straight months of My Hero Academia winning the poll.
When I started up the poll at the start of tonight, I was putting everything in, and I put Fairy Tail in, and I just put a note. I was like, don't you fucking vote for this. You're lying to yourself, you asshole, if you do. And then we started getting hate votes for it, and people being like, oh, I like it because it's the funny answer to the poll. I was like, I can't let this happen. I can't let Fairy Tail win Chapter of the Week off of a joke fucking answer on this, so I had to restart it. But it was actually second place by the time I ended it.
It seems like these are genuine. Yeah, because we got Nisekoi and World Trigger tied for second, and then Black Clover, One Piece is in third, and then Black Clover. You know, Black Clover's got more votes than usual. Makes sense. Pretty good chapter. Nisekoi, exceptional chapter. So, it took away from World Trigger a little bit. And then One Piece, not so great. A little bit lower than usual.
I'm always surprised by the voting at times. Like, so few votes for Food Wars, so few votes for Black Clover, a lot of votes for World Trigger, though, and
oh no, they're trying to change it! They're trying to change the results at the last minute!
I'm like, you had so long to vote! You had so long!
Alright. But anyway, that is gonna do it, guys. So, let's sign off. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for Weekly Manga Recap. We tend to record the show Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on hitbox.tv/RoloT. You can check out our past episodes of Weekly Manga Recap at podbean.com, as well as our YouTube channel and on iTunes, where you can also leave a comment or rating to help us beat the Woodworking Podcast.
Yes.
Also, be sure to ask us questions and suggest future manga for us to read or movies to watch for that bonus episode that we're going to be doing pretty soon. And you can do that by sending us an email, weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Finally, special thanks go to not just the guys who help us make the show, like Steve Mann and Infamous Planet, but also Patreon supporters. Your support allows us to create bonus content for you guys to enjoy. What was it that we just did? It was the bonus episode, right? Yes.
We just recorded the bonus episode, Weekly Manga Recap Lives. It'll be going up either tonight or tomorrow. It's not going to make a last-minute thing. I'm just waiting to confirm something before we put it up, essentially. And then we'll have that up there. We'll be doing the commentary probably this weekend. So I think we'll be all kosher with that.
Yeah, so that's going to do it.
Is that... What's happening? Oh, the snake just turned his back on the show. Oh, I thought you were like fucking Vince McMahon back when they hired the NWO. You just spent the entire podcast like occasionally cutting to you with your insane ramblings, and then at the end of it you're like, and I'm done with this. I'll destroy what I've created. Me! And my stupid chips from manga! It didn't work as well because I don't have a chair that has a high enough back for that to show anything. I had to like have the notes stapled to my back, essentially, but you get the impression I'm going with here.
You're going to have to explain that reference to me after we go down.
Oh, it's such a great scene! Alright, fine. Well, we'll end here so I can explain this to Nick.
We have wrestling to talk about. Go away.
Okay, alright. Get out of here! Get out!